Hey, thanks for being here. It's good to see you again. I can't see you. I have no idea what you look like. You could be naked for all I care. Seriously, I don't care. But actually, you're a wonderful person when you see past all your flaws. Well, I mentioned on a show last week that I had updated my will. It's always a good idea to review your plans for death. And in doing so, I recalled donating your organs. That's part of the will. They ask you, sometimes on a driver's license, they ask you, do you want to donate your organs? And I always say, it's a hell of a time to ask me. Why? What are you saying? Why? What's your point? Why are you asking me when I'm doing a driver's license if I want to donate my organs? That doesn't happen when I go to the supermarket and I get like a half a pound of bologna and the guy behind the counter says, hey, do you want to donate your organs? So it's not the right time right now. So later on in the week, we set up an interview answering the question, should you be an organ donor? What's involved in that? So we'll play that interview later in the week, but it did spark questions about it, and I talked about it recently on a program that I was betwixt and between about whether to donate my organs. Now, technically, after I die, who the hell cares? Why would I want to retain my dead organs? I'm sorry if this subject is making you squeamish. It's bothering me, too. But yet it's a question posed to the living. Do you want to donate your organs? And I don't know if that necessarily means if you donate them after you're dead, at which point I say, go to town, man, do what you want to do. But beforehand, would I want to donate my organs or my dorgans while I'm still alive? The answer is no. Would you do it for a loved one? I don't know. Stop. Leave me alone with that. Why do I have to figure this out now? If someone comes to me and says, Ron, I'd like your kidney, we can talk about it then. Why are you bringing it up now? I'm not in the mood to talk about this. I have a feeling, though, that if I did donate my organs, in most cases, the recipients would probably say, no thanks, I'm good. Whose liver will I be getting? It's Ron Van Dam's liver. Oh, no, thank you. No, not his. Not his. I know the guy. I know his liver. That ain't happening. I'm good. Thanks. Take care. Bye-bye. I don't think people want my organs. I really don't. I don't think they do. I think it would be an insult. I'm sorry, Mr. Johnson, but you're going to need a kidney. Oh, all right, where can I get one? Ron Van Dam said that he would, what? No. No way. I do not want that guy's organs in my body. And to be honest with you, if I needed an organ, I would want to know about from whence the organ came. I might contact Ancestry.com in order to find out the history of that person's organ. I don't know. I want to know where that organ came from. What if the guy who had the organ was possessed by the devil? And then they implanted the organ in me and I had a possessed organ or a repossessed organ. I don't want that. I don't want that. I need to screen my organs. And I don't think I've ever said that before in my life. So what's my advice to you? I have none. My advice to you is, if you need an organ, do your homework. Just all I'm saying, do some homework. Just sit down and do some homework. Make sure you do homework when you want an organ. Do your homework.
On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Do some homework.
Welcome to the Ron Van Dam Show. Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Don't look a gift organ in the mouth.
Whatever.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good afternoon. Good evening. Good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show.
Thank you.
Back, relax, grab a cup of coffee, a cup of tea, whatever your liquid libation may be in the morning, and join us as we take a look at the world around us. As much as it's a pleasure to be with you, the pleasure is actually all yours. And now, here's your host, Ron Van Dam.
Thank you, Julie. Thank you. Thank you, Julie. May I have your organ, please? Hey, welcome to the program. Thank you for being here. Pleasure's all yours, as was expressed in the opening of the program today. I have a problem with passwords. Not the game show with Alan Ludden. I'm talking about passwords for my computer and my tablets and my devices. I didn't grow up yesterday. I wasn't born yesterday. I lived in a time when men were men and organs were organs. We wrote things down. We didn't have passwords. There was nothing to protect. There was nothing. You put a freaking lock on your front door and you go to bed and that was it. I got to tell you, when I was growing up, we left the front door open all day. And there were door-to-door salespeople. And we still left the door open all day. Also, the car was in the driveway, the family car, and it remained unlocked all day. No one ever took the car. Now, granted, I didn't grow up in the projects, but still, times are very, very different today, no matter what neighborhood you live in. It was a simpler time. Yeah, okay, fine. The usual. It was a simpler time. I didn't think we had passwords. I don't remember having one. I don't think so. I don't think people were stealing stuff. Do you know that your identity can be stolen? What? I don't even want them to have my organs. Now, for some reason, everything that I do has to have a complicated password to it. And not just the name of my dog, which I don't use because it's a little bit obvious. Just a little bit obvious. If you're using your dog's name as a password, you need to rethink that. It's just a little bit obvious. Don't use your dog's name.
Aww.
I know it's cute, but don't use it. And don't use your dog's name and then 123. I mean, come on. Come on. Why do you think they have passwords? Now the passwords have to be complicated. It has to be a capital letter somewhere in there, some type of symbol like an exclamation point or an asterisk or whatever. It has to be 8 to 16 letters long. You have to include a DNA sample somewhere within the password. I mean, it's just absolutely ridiculous. And then it gets even crazier. Then you got security questions. How do I remember what my favorite beverage is 15 years ago? I don't remember that. I didn't write that down. Well, then you can't get into your account. But it's my account! I'm sorry you can't get into it. But I don't remember what my password is. That's too bad. You must continue to pay us then because you can't get out of it now. I can't stand it. And I got a different password for everything. I have like 200 passwords. But I did something different than what you do. I wrote them down. Ron, where are these handy little passwords? Oh, in a place you'll never find them. No, they're not up my ass. I think that's the first place we all would look. Happily. No, I write them down, and I use them all the time. Every time there's a power outage or something happens, it's like I never had a password. Ron, please enter your password. Which one? Which one of 200 shall I enter? Security question. Why do they make them so hard? What's your favorite beverage 15 years ago? I don't know. It was some alcohol. I don't remember which one. You name it. It could take a while. It's passwords for everything. Because we're so security-minded, everything is so we don't trust anybody. And if you're walking around coming out of church and thinking that mankind is so trustworthy and wonderful, then why the hell do we have so many passwords? Why do we lock our doors? Why are we so paranoid? Why do we have spyware and firmware and hardware and all this stuff? Because we trust everybody? No, because we don't trust anybody. And that's the way it should be. That's the way it should have always been. Because people are nuts now. People are freaking nuts. They were always nuts. It's just we didn't know just how nuts they were. And what do we do in this country when we're surrounded by a bunch of nuts? We sell them automatic weapons. Not the kind you have to load and everything. Just the kind that fire off 100 rounds in a shot. Just make them all over the place with all the nuts walking around. That's what we do. That makes sense to me. Well, I'm not a nut, so I should be able to have one. If you want one, you're a nut. Well, I want one because I can. It's in the Constitution. Oh, yeah, right. Okay, fine. Yeah, my forefathers, all four of them, walking around with semi-automatic weapons back at the time of the signing of the Constitution. They didn't have them then. These guys didn't know that that was going to be a possibility. Sure, they were wonderful people, but they weren't fortune tellers. My God, get with the program. Let's start walking upright for a change, shall we? All right, I'm getting too opinionated and it's starting to bother me. I bring this up because my guest today represents small companies. Well, let's call them middle companies, not small companies. Companies that are like $10 million companies. That's not a small company to me. If your company's making $10 million, you pretty much got yourself a gig. I think you're okay. I don't think you have to go to Shark Tank anymore. Seriously. But anyway, this is what they represent. Middle-sized companies, they call them. And they survey them. They do surveys. They survey them, which I guess is the verb to having surveys. I guess the verb would be surveying them. I don't think it's proper, but I believe it is the verb. I really don't know. It's not really important to check. So we're going to talk to that guest momentarily on the program today. We have a lot of other interesting interviews through the rest of the week that I actually will find quite captivating. I hope you can join me in my excitement, my unbridled excitement. As I continue, see, to me, this show, you and I mean, there's thousands and thousands and thousands of people listening, but there's a closeness, you see. I don't, when I'm doing this show, I don't think of thousands of people. I just think of you. You're the one that bothers me. But we walk through this life together. I was going to say hand in hand, and then I thought, that's a little awkward. But we all go through this stuff, and I think it's important so that we keep our sanity to realize that when things don't make sense, we're not the only ones that are baffled by this, that there are other people such as us who are similarly baffled but don't really say it out loud because you don't walk around being baffled all day. But I am totally baffled. Now, I'm not baffled in a negative way. By the way, baffle is a weird word, isn't it? I'm confused by things. For example, I just made another payment to my insurance company that insures my house and my automobile. It's a package deal. They call it bundling. Well, my checkbook has been bundled to death. I made my last payment on my house payment, and I'm again baffled. My rates for the past 3 years have steadily gone up. And I call up my insurance company and I say, I thought I was being bundled here. And I said, why is it going up like $300 a year? And their response is this: well, Ron, 3 years ago, you made a claim on your house insurance because you had a leak in your bathroom and the repair was about $3,000-$4,000. And I said, yes, so? This is like, excuse me, why I have home insurance. They said, yes, but your rates went up because your rating went down. Excuse me, my rating went down because I used my home insurance for something that I had nothing to do with that was coverable by my home insurance. That's correct, Ron. So wait a minute. So my premiums go up because I made a claim? That's correct, Ron. You bastards! You cannot do that. That's called mafia stuff. You can't do that. You can't charge me for using the thing that I'm paying for. It's baffling. Is that legal to do? Yes. Does it make sense? No. Now I can see, if every single year I'm placing a claim through home insurance, every single year, for some reason, Ron's got something wrong with his house. Let's reinspect the house and like reassess it, and maybe his premium should go up. But one freaking bathroom leak from 3 years ago, that's it? And now my rates go up. So in effect, I'm coming close to paying the claim that you paid me. So why am I even having insurance? Because you have to. Oh my God. Now I understand auto insurance, because if your car runs into somebody else's car and they suffer damage, you've got to pay for their damage. It's not their fault. It's your fault. Your insurance company has to pay out. There's other parties involved. There's no other parties involved when I have a leak in my bathroom. I'm not destroying the house next door, and I have to pay the house next door because my bathroom hurt your bathroom next door. No, that's a solitary problem. So why do my premiums go up on my own home? Why do I need to have home insurance? If my bathroom leaked and I didn't have home insurance, I'm not going to have a bathroom. Unless I raise the money from my friends or my folks or GoFundMe. By the way, GoFundMe sounds very, very close to excuse me, go fuck me. So I don't know if that's on purpose, but every time I hear someone say that I raise money through GoFundMe, in the back of my mind, it's like, oh my God, I can't get that out of my mind. It's too close to that phrase. Do you understand what I'm saying? You have no idea, do you? All right, we're going to take a break, then we're going to speak to our guest for today.
Hey, this is Bobby Marone, former heavyweight contender. But I hung up my boxing gloves to open the area's favorite new restaurant.
It's Headshots, Bobby.
Headshots. Hey, this month we're starting something new at Headshots. It's our all-you-can-eat nothing but meatball brunch. That's right. You can come to Headshots and load up on all your favorite sausage.
Meatball?
Right. Meatballs. It doesn't matter what kind of chicken you like.
Meatball?
What kind of meatball you like. We got it at the all-you-can-eat nothing but typewriters.
Meatballs. Meatballs.
Nothing but meatball buffet. You heard me right. No pasta. No cacciatore, no lasagna, just delicious lasagna.
Yeah, meatballs.
Meatballs. However you like them. Traditional, hot and spicy, stuffed with cheese, covered in marinara. My mouth is watering just thinking about eating all these cheerleaders.
Holy sh... Meatballs.
Eating all these meatballs myself. So what are you waiting for? Get on down to Headshots and see if you can eat more General Gao's chicken than me, Bobby Marone. That last one was supposed to be meatballs too, huh?
Yeah.
You're listening to The Big Show with Ron Van Dam. I wish I could listen to it too, but sometimes he says bad words.
Thomas Stewart is Executive Director of the National Center for the Middle Market. What is the middle market?
Well, the middle market is, as we've defined it, and the definition's getting pretty well accepted, is the middle third of the private sector. You set the sliders to say, let's find companies that are smaller, let's find companies that are bigger, and in the middle you get a couple of hundred thousand companies with annual revenues between $10 million and $1 billion a year. So that would include Sam Adams Beer, it would include the Red Sox and the Celts and the pretty much every professional sports team. I'm pretty sure Legals is a middle market company, but it's a spread of companies in the middle. They're mid-sized companies, typically revenues maybe $100 million. A lot of them family owned, most of them privately held. A lot of manufacturers.
Those are big companies. I mean, nonetheless. Yeah,
they're not small. They're bigger. They're bigger than small, and they're smaller than big, and they tend to grow a lot faster than anybody else.
We're not talking about candy stores on the corner. Okay.
No, we're not.
No. Okay. So a survey was taken recently, I understand, about the very thing we're talking about.
Yeah, this is what we do at the National Center for the Middle Market, is we study mid-sized companies to identify their strengths and weaknesses, their contribution to the economy, and their problems. Mm-hmm. And one of the things we did in the aftermath of the hurricanes in the fall and the wildfires in California is we took a look at how well mid-sized companies are prepared for risks. Mm-hmm. And how good is their risk management? How strong is their resilience? If they take a licking, can they keep on kicking? How well do they bounce back? And what kinds of disruptions hit them the most and hit them the hardest? So we surveyed 1,000 companies to take a look at some of those questions. We got some pretty interesting answers.
Okay. Now, one would think that insurance would cover most of this. You can buy insurance for losses, things like that. But we're talking beyond those kinds of things, aren't we?
Yeah, and you can't insure everything. You certainly can't, you can sometimes get the money back, but you can't get the time or production back. But one of the things we looked at is we looked at three different kinds of risks. And we thought, you know, you've got some of the risks that you understand, like cyber risk, digital risk, you're hacked or your computers go down. Then you've got a larger operational risk. You know, there's a strike, there's a fire in the warehouse, there's a hurricane, one of your suppliers has a disaster that means that you can't get your materials. Yeah. Operational risk. And then the risk we looked at was what we call strategic risk, which are the big things like there's a big change in trade policy, or there is a new technology that comes in and really messes with my industry, or there's been a lot of consolidation in my business and the ranks of my competitors have suddenly changed. Turns out the strategic risk, which is uninsurable, is the biggest, most prevalent, most damaging, and hard to recover from.
Well, who would be stupid enough to change a trade policy? But anyway, we're not here to talk about that. And a lot of these...
No comment.
I didn't expect one. I didn't leave you any room to give one.
But you know, it's interesting. Yeah. It is interesting. Companies do need some sort of, you know, risk happens mm-hmm. when the landscape you're competing on changes. And that could literally be it changes because of an earthquake, or it could change because of other events that are policy events, or big demographic changes could change, you know, aging populations can mess your strategy up, but good.
Well, look what happened in 2007, 2008, when we went into what we called the recession, depression slash, and there were good percentages of companies that went out of business because they couldn't survive that loss.
Yeah, and that's one of the things we learned about mid-sized companies mm-hmm. is we began to understand their resilience because mm-hmm. they actually, the middle market actually added jobs during this period of time.
Yeah.
They took advantage of it. So we thought, wow, this is a really resilient group.
Yeah.
But when we looked this time, we found, for example, that we found that one out of five companies had some sort of operational disruption. It could be a strike. It could be a supply chain problem. It could be a hurricane, whatever it might be.
Mm-hmm.
It affected just under 10% of their revenue. So it was a big impact. And this is, it had one of these things in the last 2 years. But 77% had recovered completely, which meant that 23% had not yet recovered completely.
Yeah, that's quite a bit.
So, you know, when you get clobbered by one of these things, it's a big deal. And it's really important for leaders and executives and board members and investors to think, how do I identify, manage, and try to mitigate these risks so that they don't knock me on my keister.
Is it kind of known since that happened in 2007, 2008, or when you get a president or administration that doesn't seem to give you any clues as to what's going to happen, are companies now learning their lesson and coming up with plan B and plan C and plan D because they could indeed come into action?
It's a great question, and I want to make sure we're not just talking about stuff that can happen out of the White House or Washington or anywhere else, because these strategic or operational risks can come from
anywhere.
They can come from left field or right field or straight up the middle, right? And one of the things that we learned in our survey is that 71% of these critical middle market companies say that they have a continuity plan.
Mm-hmm.
But if you double click on that business continuity plan and ask how good is it, it turns out that in many cases it's not as good as it ought to be. They don't, for example, necessarily have lined up an extra line of credit with their banks in case they need it. They don't have really good plans for people. Staff plans or what happens if I lose some of my key people.
Yeah.
So these continuity plans are not as strong as they might be. And the other thing that we learned is that the bigger the company, the more likely it is to have an up-to-date and pretty robust continuity plan.
Because they have the revenue and wherewithal to as a luxury to be able to look at that. Most companies
may just be more sophisticated.
They may
have a bigger finance department
exactly.
and that sort of thing.
Exactly.
I mean, one of the things that we sort of thought about is you really ought to think about a framework that helps you think about, if you think about strategic risk and operational risk and digital risk, then in each of these cases, you want to figure out a way to sharpen your reconnaissance so you're looking better, so you're more less likely to be surprised.
Right.
Improving your resilience so that if something happens, you're well insured or you got a line of capital or you've got backup plans for your suppliers or your distribution, so you've got resilience. And the third thing is recovery. Have plans already in place so that if something, as best you can, so that if something hits, you're not trying to make up a recovery plan on the spot.
Right.
So, you know, reconnaissance, resilience, recovery. If you think about those three things and then think, what do we do to improve reconnaissance? You know, what's the conversation? What's the research we need to do?
Yeah.
And you can start filling in the blanks on that and you can make a much stronger risk approach to managing risk.
But Thomas, wasn't there a time in our business lives where we either took out insurance or we made sure that we had an anti-theft device so people couldn't break into the store overnight, et cetera, et cetera. Now we've got to spend millions and millions of dollars on cybersecurity. The cost to a company to exist and look forward to any possibilities is far more expensive than any time in our history, probably.
I think you're right. One of the things we learned in a study that we did on cybersecurity among mid-sized companies is that the companies that have the strongest cybersecurity approaches and are also the fastest growing. So, you know, maybe they're spending extra money on cybersecurity, but if they are, it's not stopping them from growing faster than others. So to some extent, you know, a good defense is a good offense, and this can help companies grow more aggressively. Having said that, I think that it's really true that just that the number of companies that are less than well prepared for a cyber attack is huge, and that's particularly true in the middle market, because, you know, you're vulnerable to malware or hackers, and you may be the backdoor to a big company. So you know, you need a strong cybersecurity defense.
Well, I think in that category, it's not if it'll happen, it's at what juncture will it happen, because that seems to be...
You know, the proverb is there are two kinds of companies, companies that know they've been hacked and companies that have been hacked but don't know it.
Yeah.
And I think that the datum now is the average company has been penetrated for 200 days before they even know it.
Yeah. Well, for more information, you can go to middlemarketcenter.org, middlemarketcenter.org. They'll help you understand. They'll give you the data to help evaluate. And thank you so much for your time today.
Ron, thank you.
Pleasure. Bye-bye. All right. All right. Oh, look. All right. Okay. All right. I'm not going to argue with you. I'm drinking iced coffee for some reason. I don't know why. I don't care for it. I think the only reason I'm drinking it is because I wanted something cold. Right now, that when I'm taping this show, it's taping. There's no tape involved anymore. When I'm recording this show, it's the morning, and that's what you do in the morning. It's the law. If you don't drink coffee in the morning, you will be banished to another country where they don't drink coffee. And you try to find one, you can't. It's a requirement. I don't know why. I think it was the Coffee Growers of America that made it a requirement that you can't live without drinking coffee. What a strong, strong union they have. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm out of time for today. I hope that you can join me tomorrow. This is a hope that I have. I go through the whole day just hoping that. So fulfill a young child's dream and tune in tomorrow when once again we'll do another program. Until then, I wish you peace. Thank you so much. Thank you for participating. Thank you for your patronage. Please come back. Here's a special offer. If you tell your friends and family about this show and they tune in and they listen, I will give you a free organ of your choice, whatever you want. Well, not all of them, just some of them. The ones I'm not using, like the sex one.